All right. Hi, and welcome to the Difficult Tea Podcast. I am Montrese Ping-Hardy, and I am hosting with co-host Ken Meeker.
Because we were on the topic, I pulled up the UN report records, Peace Bell Progress Against Combating Systemic Racism Against People of African Descent, and insists on urgent need for transformative change. And this is a UN September of last year. Mm-hmm. So that says something that internationally, the UN says not enough is being done to right the wrongs the white Western European world did to anyone that originated from Africa or is still there. The problems of Africa were and created by people from Western Europe.
Right.
We're going to take all your resources. We're going to enslave your people, and we're going to bail. Bye. What?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
It just doesn't make any
sense. No one can make it make sense. But it's really interesting that that headline as well. Yes, there's an urgent need for transformative change. My question is, why is it so urgent to you all? And over the past year, I have participated in at least two virtual and international business commerce conferences. And there was a wide array of topics and speakers, et cetera, but there was a great focus on the money that the revenue that is to be gained from this, this universal, there's a huge drive for universality and universal accessibility. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many things. There's this idea of if we all come together and unite on these things, we'll be able to increase trade and all of these different things faster, better, more effectively, and everybody benefits economically from it. That was one of the biggest takeaways. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, and it's absolutely true. Everyone benefits from greater diversity and inclusion and accessibility. Everyone benefits. And there is more than enough data to support that.
Absolutely. And so that's what that headline, it reminds me of. And yet at the same time, I can't help but be suspicious. Hey, yeah, we do all benefit, but
why is it so hard?
Why is it so hard?
That's the question, because I think human beings, it is in our nature to want to categorize things, because it goes to the, okay, is something dangerous or is something safe? Everything at its very basic level gets thrown into those two categories, safe, not safe. And so anything that's new, anything that's different, anything that isn't familiar, I think our brains just immediately want to throw into unsafe.
Mm.
What's necessary is awareness and being consciously aware of the decisions you're making, and recognizing that default is probably not always right. And in fact, it's probably almost always wrong. That assumption that this is dangerous because I don't know about it, so therefore I'm going to put it over there. But usually that's on, I call it autopilot. We just do it automatically without thinking it through.
As you're saying this, I cannot help but to also think from the space, from the BIPOC space, when we think of categorizing something as safe versus unsafe, we tend to be, ooh, this is an overgeneralization. I'll speak for myself. I tend to be operating from a space of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And
that adds a layer to it.
Right. Right. And there are times when that trauma or fear in itself can help, but it does tend to deter and create more problems than it ever does help.
Yeah, because our brains want to categorize everything. And so if something feels the same, if it looks the same, if it smells the same, if it is remotely related to something that caused trauma or led to some sort of, you know, bad outcome or whatever term you want to use. I think trauma is the right one, but our brains are automatically, oh, this is like this. And so our brains throw it in that basket of things that are bad. But the truth is every situation is different. And that's where we have to be conscious about our choices, our decisions, what we're doing, and recognize that, yes, it might feel the same, but it's not the same.
It is,
and that is very, very hard to do. And it is something that is, it's a learned behavior. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that, because I actually was doing a couple classes for teenagers who were in distress, like they were coming, you know, it was an alternative school for teenagers that were having some sort of life circumstance where that was causing turmoil. And it was about having healthy habits and exercising self-care was this seminar that I was teaching at. And one of the things that I was helping them with is recognizing, and they do have a choice in their lives to be proactive or not proactive about the decisions that they make. And the more proactive they can get and the more aware they are and consciously are aware of the decisions and choices they make, the better the outcomes will be. Mm-hmm. And this all kind of plays, you know, plays into that is when we're reactive to a situation because it feels familiar, you know, out mm-hmm. of trauma, which is our natural reaction. That's normal to learn behaviors to get in front of it and recognize, wait, am I reacting to what's really there or am I reacting to what it feels like is there? Mm-hmm. And it takes, because there's no destination with that. You're not just, it is always just getting better and better and better at recognizing when we're kind of going on autopilot.
Right.
I do the same thing. I mean, I'm just as guilty as you are probably of sometimes I just react to a situation because it is from something that was traumatic or traumatizing in my past. And over years, I've gotten better at recognizing when I do that and making corrective action.
Right. I mean, well, thank God for therapy, right?
I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for therapy.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, my goodness, that has been a huge piece of my unlearning and my changing in the same way. So I completely hear you there.
Journaling is one of those things that I think is really underrated and is something that can be incredibly helpful about learning and recognizing when we're doing that kind of stuff, right? Doing reflective journaling. And
right.
it is so helpful to move forward with those types of things, especially if you've experienced some sort of trauma and want to not have it continue to carry, you know, you don't want to keep it carrying it forward anymore. Mm-hmm. So I would like to share a couple books.
Of course.
I don't want to speak for you, but I'm pretty sure that you and I both share that.
Always want to.
So I recently picked up a couple books that I think are fantastic. I'm sure you've probably heard of a couple of these already, if not having already read them. The first one is So You Want to Talk About Race. If you haven't read that book, it is phenomenal, and it is a great introduction to people that for anyone that really wants to start engaging in conversations about race, and that it's, you know, we're going to mess up, you know, that's,
it's inevitable.
We're going to mess up, and that's okay. And that's part of the thing is people are so worried about getting all this stuff right that they don't even talk about it. Nobody's ever going to get it all right.
Not ever.
Ever. Nobody ever is going to, it's just wanting to understand each other and, you know, learn from other people's experiences and have empathy and compassion for other people that are different. We're all different. And so there's that one.
Is it E.J. Yoma?
Yes, yes. I knew I was not going to say her name right. And so thank you for saying it, because I am very respectful of always saying somebody's name right. And I didn't want to say it wrong. So thank you.
Hopefully, I'm hoping I said it right.
Yeah, I believe you did. I believe you did. The next one, and this one is awesome. I'm so glad I stumbled upon it. It's called Me and White Supremacy: Combat Racism, Change the World, and Become a Good Ancestor. It's by Layla Saad.
Yes.
It's a 30-day to-do for every single day you do something that is about systemic racism and what you can do to be better. And so week two is anti-Blackness, racial stereotypes, and cultural appropriation, which I think ties very well into the topic that we've been talking about and so that's week two. And you know, just remember how we said, I don't see color.
That.
And so how that ties into anti-Blackness, racist stereotypes, and things like that. All lives matter. Duh. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that's not the reality of it. And this, I'll say it, we don't value Black lives in this country, or at least there's a significant group that don't. And by saying all lives matter, do they?
Do
is the question I would ask those people. Do they? So anyway.
I wish you could see my face.
And so, but this book is just phenomenal because it's like, what is colorblindness? And here's some of the excerpts from this book about colorblindness and how it may or may not show up.
Yes.
You say, I don't see color, I only see people. And what does that statement mean? Well, it means you're denying the reality of a significant group of people. I don't even see you as Black. I'm sorry, and this is a joke, and I'm pretty sure you'll recognize that, Madrice, but just for everyone else, this is a joke. Unless you're blind, you can't say that.
Exactly.
I can say that because you and I are both visually
impaired.
We can say it. And then there's a couple more that I just want to go over. I don't care if a person is Black, white, green, yellow, purple, or blue. Well, good, you shouldn't.
Right.
But why do you need to even say that? And then here is another one. He, she is a person of color when referring to a Black person, because saying Black makes the speaker feel uncomfortable. This is something I have personally encountered myself, because language, and over time, terms change. It used to be African-American was the culturally appropriate term that and I think it's difficult for people that actually care, and I hope I am in that category. I always want to use the term that is right for whoever I am talking to or about, you know, like gay and queer. Those are terms that, you know, have changed over time. Right. Black, African-American is one of the same ones. I always want to use what is appropriate for who the audience, I guess. Does that make sense? Did I say that?
Absolutely, okay. It does.
And so, but... for context, you know, I went to South Africa many years ago, a few decades ago at this point. And in South Africa, they made it a point to make sure that when you were referring to the Black population there, that they were Black. They were adamant about that. It was a cultural identity in that country. And it was so different at the time from, you know, the United States, because it was African-American in the United States. This is 20 some odd years ago. And it really, you know, it struck me that how important it was for them as an identity.
Mm.
And it since then it stuck with me. And now, you know, here in the United States, it's transitioning, you know, it's not African-American anymore for a lot of people. It's Black. It's not for me to say what's right or wrong. I just wanted to be respectful of everybody.
Absolutely. And so many are different. I know for me, I happen to be one who I float between the two, and that's just my experience.
And that's okay. You get to define
it's okay.
You get to define you, not anybody else.
Exactly.
And that's why I think it's important to acknowledge and recognize that. And that's, you know, going back to, we're not always gonna, you know, being right or wrong in this. I'm gonna be wrong sometimes. I may say, you know, African-American to the wrong audience, and they're like, it's Black. Oh, good. Correct me.
Please correct me.
Please correct me.
I just want to be right. Thank you for saying something and not running away.
Yeah. I want to acknowledge you.
Yes.
For as you are, not for how, you know, because that's what something that I don't think is that happens enough is, you know what, if somebody calls me queer, I'm going to correct them. Because that's not how I identify.
Right.
And it's not, it's always in a way of, they don't need to apologize. They don't need to say they're sorry. They didn't mean harm or intend harm.
Right.
That's just what they believe is the appropriate term. It's for me to correct them in a compassionate, caring way, recognizing that, you know what? We're all going to get it wrong sometimes, and that's okay. And I think
we are.
And we need to understand that other people, we need to have that compassion and empathy for when somebody else does get it wrong.
You know, I 100% agree with that. I believe also that one can not go wrong. And then again, they may be, but I don't believe a person can go wrong with asking questions.
As long as it comes from the right place.
As long the only as caveat it comes from I would the right ask, place. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, like, I'm not going to ask, can I touch your hair? It was a question in the book, and that's why I said it.
Hit the right one right there.
I would love to see, sometimes I would love to see these things flipped where it happens to white women.
I could point you to a number of creators.
I mean, just because, you know, sometimes approaching things from humor makes it a little more palatable for people.
Yes.
Because these are hard things to talk about. They're difficult. And you know what? It is only natural, I think, sometimes for somebody who has empathy and compassion and wants the world to be a better place to feel guilt is not the shame. Shame is a better word for what their culture has done in the past. You know, I come, you know, my heritage is mostly, you know, from Great Britain, from the UK. The truth is we weren't so great, especially to people from Africa. There is a sense of shame that, you know what, there were probably people in my past that I'm related to that weren't so great of people.
Definitely.
And that's just a reality, and that's uncomfortable to think. But the truth is I can't change any of that stuff. It is what it is. All I can do is be better and say that, you know what?
Better and move forward.
Yes. I don't care if they were my ancestors. They sucked. They did bad. They were bad people. And, you know, going back to reparations, that's why it's not up for me to decide. You know, and so I don't get to decide what's right or wrong for somebody else that got harmed. I'm a big believer in that.
I 100% agree with you. I want to take a quick moment because I see that we have, I'm looking at the time, but I also see that we have the next topic of gender danger. I have enjoyed this conversation so much. This one was a good one.